Hey everyone, welcome back to the 443 Security Simplified. I'm your host, Mark LaLiberty, and joining me today is...
Corey Knockreiner. Couldn't figure out anything better than an excited voice. Go creativity!
I'm just happy to be here.
Woohoo!
On today's
last day before vacation!
Oh, that's right, you are out of here. Hooray. I'll make sure your stuff is in a box and out of the office when you come back.
Yay, extended vacation!
On today's episode, we are following a theme of justice and injustice. So with that, let's jump on in. Let's start with the news.
Let's dive in. I like my news warm.
All right.
You know, the sun's been out for a while. It's heated up a bit, so I can just jump right into that warm news.
I prefer it refrigerated so it goes down easier.
Jump into your beer.
Exactly. We have a few different news stories today, all on a very common theme of U.S. justice. So with that, let's start with the first one.
I feel like we need some sort of theme for a cork. Dun, dun, dun.
I'm sure our producer can add that in if needed.
There we go.
Last week.
The Honorable Mark LaLiberté ruling.
Last week.
I'll let you start now.
Last week. Equifax agreed to a settlement with the FTC, agreeing to pay $700 million.
For what? I mean, why would Equifax have to pay anything?
In response to their 2017 data breach.
Oh, yeah, that small little breach that pretty much gave away every U.S. citizen's social security number.
Yes. People affected by the breach are entitled to $425 million of the settlement.
Woohoo, I'm rich!
You know what? You joke, but you could potentially be getting on the orders of hundreds to thousands of dollars from this breach if you're affected. So the settlement includes up to 10 years of credit monitoring or $125 cash.
I wonder where that credit monitoring comes from. Probably a trustworthy source that I can be sure to keep my private information safe.
And no small amount of irony, credit monitoring provided by Equifax.
I wonder, by the way, do they have to offer their competitors? That would kind of suck if they have to pay for credit monitoring, but I don't like them anymore, so I pick TransUnion for my credit monitoring.
I don't know. You could use your $125 to get
out.
It. Yeah.
I was a breach victim, apparently.
You can also get a cash payment of up to $20,000 per person for expenses, including...
That sounds like it has caveats.
Yes. Losses from unauthorized charges, the cost of freezing or unfreezing your report if you did that before they made it free, the cost of credit monitoring you've already paid for, fees for accountants and attorneys related to the breach, and $25 per hour for up to 20 hours for time dealt with the that you've spent dealing with the breach. Now,
I guess I can't really take advantage of that unless maybe I know somebody, Mark, who can use my social security number to buy some things, and then maybe we'll go 50-50.
No. No. You realize we are on air.
Oh,
right
wait
now.
A second. Did I say that out loud?
Now,
I think the tape's going to leak.
These numbers are pretty high. Like, normally when it comes to a class action suit, I'm used to like the $3.75 I got from Sony removing the ability to put Linux on my PlayStation 3.
Yeah.
But I mean, it is hundreds to tens of thousands of dollars. That said, these numbers will be reduced downwards if a significant number of people submit claims. And the fund is exhausted.
For the $700 million limit, though.
$425 million for this. Other, like, $200 million is just fees or penalties. But, I mean, that is a ton of money, but really not if all 200 million people affected by the breach file a claim.
Now, by the way, if people don't know of this and they use much less than the $425 million, does that mean they get off with saving some money?
Something tells me it goes to the lawyers. if you can see if you're affected by this, by the way, the domain was equifaxbreachsettlement.com. We'll include a link also in the Secplicity article that goes with this blog post or this. What is this? This is a podcast.
By the way, did you remember them like already kind of creating a fishy domain themselves when this started? And now we have another Equifax breach settlement
that's
domain.
So
that's not yes. Yes, Equifax. It's again not an official Equifax domain.
This one is at least linked off of the FTC's website. So if you don't trust it, go find like the FTC's settlement page and they've got a link to it. They've got a handy tool where you can put in the majority of your social security number and your last name to see if you're affected.
I guess I don't even have to comment on that. Yay. Does that mean if the FTC loses it, I can find them?
I don't know.
Who finds the FTC?
And it is a large portion of your social security number they ask for.
I guess in all reality, our social security numbers are already uncovered. We might as well just post them on Facebook.
Yep.
Like Mr. LifeLock guy.
Exactly. Now, so funny enough, like tangentially off this, like I assumed that every person I know is affected by this, like anyone that is open a credit card or a line of credit.
Yeah,
or
you just have had to do anything. I mean, I've made house transactions, and you may not even know. Even if you go to someone like, say, TransUnion, the other two guys, for your own personal, I don't know whether you're locking credit or checking your credit score. You don't have to have personally used Equifax. Mm-mm. If you've done anything that required a credit check, employment, even getting a job nowadays, employers often do credit checks. So you can be affected even if you don't even know who the hell Equifax is. You just kind of have to be an adult that has credit.
Yep. Interestingly, though, like only half my friends were actually eligible for this settlement when they went and checked. Like
that is weird.
Half of them came back saying, yeah, it says I wasn't affected.
Well, I'm trying to remember the number. Was it I think you said 200 million
like
somewhere, but I thought
millions.
It was 130 million at one point.
Maybe not. Maybe it was only 147 million.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm just rounding up.
There you go. Yeah, small roundup.
Yes. But still, like, that is a sizable number of people.
Yeah, but there is over 300 and some million people in America. Now, you got to assume that at least a quarter, if not half, are underage, but still.
Yep. So
I'm surprised your friends aren't affected.
I know. I
maybe they have no credit. Good for them.
Good for
all
them.
All cash. Nice to have rich parents.
Half of them are bartenders, so there's a
whoa,
very
that's
strong
tips.
Chance.
Yes.
Anyways, make sure you go check out that. It was EquifaxBreachSettlement.com. You can see if you're affected. High chances you are. And you could be getting a sizable amount of money from this settlement. I am actually curious where the other $275 million is going from this. Lawyer fees? I'm in the wrong line of work. Anyways, moving on to our next story of justice. Also last week, Facebook agreed with the FTC again to pay a $5 billion fine over privacy violations and its failure to inform tens of millions of users about a data leak that happened a few years ago.
As someone I often talk to has once said, it couldn't happen to a better company.
This is the largest fine that the FTC has ever levied against a tech company. And if it wasn't enough, it's in addition to a $100 million fine that they settled with the U.S. SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission, for as well. But there's some other additional stipulations with this whole like agreement they made. It also requires Mark Zuckerberg, Facebook's CEO, and other designated compliance officers to certify that the company is taking steps to protect user privacy. I assume that certify means that if they lie, they go to jail, hopefully. Also, it removes Zuckerberg's control over privacy decisions by creating an independent privacy committee.
That's kind of cool and interesting.
Yeah.
It'd be nice if businesses naturally, even if they're creating their own data or privacy committee, that they would, I guess if it's you're hiring them, it's not totally firewalled, but you kind of firewall it from your normal business practices and let them act independently. But it's cool that, you know, the government's now saying, well, you weren't doing this, so we're going to have a committee.
And we all know
that
Zuckerberg likes his control. I mean, he's the guy that bought all the houses around his house to prevent neighbors from staying next to him. But that is $5 billion. That's a huge amount of money. And this is just from the United States, too.
On the flip side, chump change for Facebook.
It is chump change, annoyingly.
I mean, that might just be a bad day on the market for them.
And they did see it coming. I saw they planned for like $3 to $5 billion that they set aside last year for fines. But this is just the U.S. Like only a few EU countries like Italy have fined them so far. I'm assuming that the European Union as a whole will still fine them something. I think I saw it was like 11 active investigations into Facebook from the EU right now. Now, what do you think are the chances that Facebook will actually change their business model to be more privacy focused now? Do you think that, oh, now that they've been fined $5 billion and had all these rules applied, they're going to be the angel of the internet? The cynic in me says no.
Yeah, I mean, really, they're to do what they do, targeted ads and stuff, a lot of their value comes from knowing about us. Now, I think they might be more picky about who, and frankly, we've given up that right too.
Yep.
So some of the things they've done, you know, or allowed, like Cambridge Analytica, are a big deal. But the one thing I get a little irritated with all us poo-pooing on Facebook is the fact that I still believe it's in part our own fault. The EULA actually gives them rights to things like our images and our information. We are, frankly, freely giving that information up, and it's for their ad generation.
I agree with you. Yes, we are freely giving it up. But I also, like, part of me wants to think that a EULA shouldn't be the end-all be-all. Like, there should still be a, like, I mean, you've seen the South Park Sentipad episode, right?
Of course.
Like, there's a EULA, and then there's a EULA with just bogus stuff that shouldn't be upholdable in court, too. So,
but they are. I mean, we should. Yes, there should be ethics and morals and standards. We all want society to work that way, but the truth is our system works that way. You know what I mean? So I think I would love to see, you know, it goes to even what we talked about with the face back. I can't say any of the words right this time.
True, stable
face
genius.
App. Remember the face app when the Russians EULA.
Yep.
I do think maybe we should regulate some sort of thing that makes short, human readable, non-legalese EULAs to clearly tell you what you're doing or what you're giving up when you accept certain things.
I like that.
But so maybe the way to make EULAs better is to regulate some of that so a human can understand them, and there's no way that they're going to miss it. I mean, let's be honest, every user skips through the EULA immediately as they see it because it's, I don't know, 25 pages of fine print, and it's written in a way that only a more... Lawyers write in a... We talk a lot about malware apps obfuscation. I personally believe lawyers write in an obfuscative way.
Yes.
I just made up a word, by the way.
Obfuscative.
Simply to make crap harder to understand.
Obfuscative. Yeah. Would you like some caveat with that, sir?
You're welcome, Webster. I expect Oxford to have that in soon. It's a pretty popular term that I made up.
It is a bigly term.
I have the best words.
So you say this, though. GDPR actually has a requirement where privacy notices must be written in concise, easy to understand, and plain language. And I think it's almost time that the United States gets a combined GDPR-like thing.
And it's fair. So I am with you in that businesses are kind of taking advantage of it. They're using EULAs to hide things. But come on, people. I mean, you've been in security, maybe not as forever as old man Corey, but pretty long time. Every freaking app out there, whether it's Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest, you know, by definition, if you're not paying, you're not paying to do something that you do every day. You love Instagram, or at least some people apparently do, the general or worldwide you.
And wait, are you saying that I'm not an influencer?
Oh, sorry, Mark. That's why Revlon doesn't send you things for your makeup videos. But anyways, you know what I mean. We're using all this stuff for free. Think about it. What in life do you ever get for free? So you just got to realize you're giving up something every time you're using these apps. So on one hand, I'm mad at the way people like Facebook are overly laissez-faire with our stuff. But we gave it to them. We kind of were complicit in this two-way deal.
I'm with you on that. I don't know. I would like some accountability. I kind of like
your
idea.
And they're getting it, though,
yes.
Right?
They are finally getting it. $5 billion. Yeah. I mean, it's chump change to them, but it's still a sizable amount of money.
So this all started as, will they be the privacy angel? Their business model is still based on using our information, but I think they will have to be much more transparent about doing it. And they will have to do some of the things that you mentioned were in the GDPR. They have to be concise about how they're using our information, and they'll have to tell us in many different ways. But I do think they'll still be using our information for third parties and advertisement and marketing.
Well, justice partially served then.
Yeah.
Next up on the order of justice, also this last week, it was announced that former NSA contractor Harold Martin was sentenced to 9 years after pleading guilty to charges that stemmed from stealing 50 terabytes worth of classified information and reportedly hacking tools from the NSA over a 10-year period from like 1996 to, or what was it? Yeah, 96 to 2016.
Yeah, maybe about those times. And a lot of it was more, I mean, if you know anything about classification for different intelligence, secret and top secret, you know, there's stuff that's kind of public, but secret and top secret is a pretty darn big deal. So you can't treat that crap lightly.
So interestingly, his arrest came right around the time that, and in fact, I think you said a few days after the shadow brokers started leaking NSA hacking tools online.
Yep.
If you, for some reason, haven't listened to all of our podcasts when we talk about the shadow brokers all the time.
Or WannaCry specifically,
too. They're the ones that were responsible for the Eternal Blue exploits getting leaked that fueled WannaCry, NotPetya, and quite a few other massive malware and ransomware attacks over the last few years.
They had deep access to a lot of really big information about some of the tools, tactics, and procedures the FBI and NSA use. And in this case, they even had tools and exploit code, which ended up being heavily leveraged against the civilian markets.
Let's keep a counter of how many new words we can make up.
There
in this
we go.
I think we're at three. But so I don't think the FBI or NSA will ever tell us whether this is the guy that leaked to the shadow brokers. But the timeline kind of lines up, especially because he was arrested just a few days after that big major leak finally.
And we're not the only ones saying this. A lot of people have basically tied him to the shadow brokers. It's unclear if he created the shadow brokers to leak, or maybe he was the one supplying whoever the shadow brokers was. But it's just too many coincidences. I guess sometimes coincidences are just coincidences, but right now it seems like a little bit of correlation there.
Still interesting news.
Yeah. By the way, I will say this kind of leaker is one I really don't like.
Right.
You know, we've talked a lot about, for instance, Snowden. And we have many different views on whether Snowden's a complete and utter traitor or if he was actually sincere in doing it for the good of humanity. And I personally have compared him to Bradley Manning before, or
Chelsea Manning
now. He leaked data without even looking at it. So I was never really happy with the way he leaked stuff because it really was a lot of sensitive information. Whether you agree with me or not, Snowden seems to have taken an effort to be choosy about how he leaked things, what type of things he leaked, and what sources he decided to do. And now there's arguments both ways there. But I at least feel like someone like Snowden is trying to be more sincere. But this guy, I mean, he cost billions of dollars to civilian infrastructure because this resulted in WannaCry being leaked.
Yep.
So this is not the kind of leaker that I think you can call a whistleblower of any sort.
I agree with you entirely, which is why I'm not entirely sad about their 9-year sentence.
By the way, little hints for things coming up. I also will suggest that about keeping secrets safe and whether or not big governments and authorities can actually do that, that will be relevant and something we'll be talking about later.
Probably very soon.
Transition.
So this next news story is going to rile me up a little bit, so hang in there with me.
This is a new theme. Now we're not talking about cool justice served, but
this
maybe
is
justice
theme.
Going to injustice.
And this is actually going to probably cause me to lose a few friends I made at a recent event that worked in law enforcement.
Yeah, by the way, we like intelligence community in general.
Yep.
I think I'm including you, but I think you agree. We're not against intelligence for the safety of whatever country you're part of.
But there are places where security experts and intelligence community / law enforcement tend to butt heads a lot. And one of those is a topic that's been getting rather hot in the last few years. So last Tuesday, Attorney General William Barr gave the keynote address at the International
Conference. Where have I heard that name before? Who's that guy? I'm
yes.
kidding. I'm joking.
He gave the keynote address at the International Conference on Cybersecurity in New York. And he used his keynote as an opportunity to advocate for backdoored encryption with the intent of helping law enforcement catch criminals. And throughout his talk, he lamented on what he calls warrant-proof encryption, which is hindering law enforcement officers from taking down drug cartels and terrorists and human traffickers, all the scary, legitimately scary stuff. And he made several points throughout his demand, and yeah. I'd like to address some of those points here, too.
I think we should. By the way, I like to be fair to both sides. I would say backdoor encryption, too, but I think people that are on Barr's side might say that this isn't backdoored encryption. This is creating encryption in a way that third parties can sometimes see it, and we'll get into some of those details, I think, in the conversation. But just by saying backdoor encryption, we're kind of putting an implication on it. It's one that
Good.
I personally, exactly, it's one I believe, but I do want to point that out to be non-biased fair news.
That, like, is...
that exists today, by the way.
All right. Fair enough.
We'll be better than all the other ones.
Yes. Non-biased. So let's start with a few quotes from his speech, all of which is available on the Justice Department's website.
I bet that's really fun reading. I always like to go to government sites and read.
You know? I actually read through the whole thing.
Would you call it fun?
It was not fun, but it was interesting as I'm sitting there furiously taking notes going, wrong, wrong. So let's start with this one. Partway through his speech, he says, we think our tech sector has the ingenuity to develop effective ways to provide secure encryption while also providing secure legal access. And this is in the context of being able to secure an application or communication while still allowing law enforcement officers with a warrant to get in and view the contents of the message or data or whatever. And he lists a few ideas in this section of his speech. Things like virtual alligator clips, which could allow a law enforcement to add themselves as a hidden third party in an encrypted communication stream, exceptional access keys and layered cryptographic envelopes. But really, my big problem with this, we are a tech company, so we obviously trust ourselves to design secure products. But supply chain attacks keep happening across the industry. And so we have proof that we can't really trust organizations to necessarily keep their code repositories and their signing servers 100% safe.
And let's be quite honest. I mean, one of the things we've got into is authentication, and their seeds and keys that we need to use to provide tokens to devices. And we actually have to store some of those keys at some point. And if our supply chain got broken, again, we do lots of things and put a lot of OPSEC into protecting that. That's part of the value you get by working with a security company. But as we've seen in very sophisticated attacks, even big companies like Gemalto has had their SIM card supply chain infiltrated before.
Yeah.
So can you really trust people to keep the keys? I mean, certificate authorities, the backbone of every secure website, is dependent on certificate authorities, you know, assigning certificates properly. And Komodo, DigiNotar, we can name a number of certificate authorities that have had supply chain breaches.
Exactly. That is my big point, is that I don't think we can trust, like, whoever's designing these, I'm going to keep calling them backdoors for ease, whoever's designing these backdoors to keep them safe just for law enforcement. Like, if you suddenly have a backdoor in WhatsApp, you're going to have a hostile nation who's trying to get root to centers out, hacking into that company to try and get access to that back door. It's going to paint a huge target on them. And
by the way, the way you said that is the way I would, but to put it the other way, even if you designed a, say, three-party key system where there's this third party that, with the cooperation of, you know, say you have Apple and the customer has keys to protect that customer's data, but there's this third key that the government has, and the other way the encryption could unlock is if Apple and the government had those two keys together. Technically, yes, you could design an encryption system that way, but that means there has to be these third-party government keys sitting around. Who does that? Is it Apple or the government? And who protects that? And to our point, I think I kind of, forecasted this before. We already know the government can't protect their own secrets.
Right. Yes. With a big shining example of the massive NSA leaks, something is going to eventually get out, especially if it's coming from like a third party country trying to gain access to something. Bribes do a lot of work. As much as we don't want to point that out, it would be pretty easy to get a contractor to go in and grab one of those keys, I have a feeling.
Yep.
So our next bullet point from his presentation was, it is contended that blocking of lawful access is essential to giving the best protection against bad actors, but In a world of cybersecurity, we don't deal in absolute guarantees, but in relative risk. And honestly, you know, I agree with that.
The last part is the truth.
Yes.
We don't deal in absolute guarantees.
Yeah. And he goes on to talk about the slight risk increase of adding law enforcement officer backdoors. But my problem is, I mean, should the federal government be in charge of deciding how much risk an organization should take on?
Or a person, by the way. I don't think you should even couch this in organization because this affects every U.S. citizen in the world. We all have our private information in Apple or Google's cloud and all these places. And I'll get into one argument I don't know if you have against this, but yeah, we should. The whole point, it's in our Constitution that we have the right to privacy. And now the government's saying, no, we get to decide when you have the right to privacy.
Yeah, I agree with you entirely on that one. It's one of my, I don't like the idea. I'm not exactly like, you know, small government, they should stay off my lawn thing. But there are limits, and I don't like them dictating how secure my communications or my data storage should be. Just for the sake of allowing law enforcement access to it. Do you have another point you wanted to bring up on that topic?
So it's not exactly that topic. I don't know if you want to finish your points, but the one point I have is the whole premise that this will catch criminals or bad actors. Because they're talking about putting backdoors in civilian products. Mm-hmm. And the truth is, the second they do this, Who do they want to spy on or potentially spy on? Bad guys that are doing bad things or everyone in the United States? If they put backdoors in these products and companies cooperate with them, the true bad actors are simply going to stop using the backdoor products.
Yeah.
They're going to move to some Russian version, a different encryption app, one that hasn't created something. So the only thing they're giving themselves ability to do is spy on the general public when they have a subpoena.
Exactly.
It's not going to catch nation state actors. It's not going to catch sophisticated criminals. And frankly, if your only thing is to catch non-sophisticated normal criminals, there should be 100 those criminals are not necessarily the smart ones. Do you really need to backdoor everyone's encryption to catch those low-level criminals?
Exactly.
If you really want to catch the most sophisticated actors, they're not stupid enough to use backdoored encryption in the first place.
There's a few more, so he goes on to say, all systems fall short of optimality and allow some residual risk of vulnerability at a point which tech companies actually acknowledge when they propose that law enforcement can satisfy its requirements by exploiting vulnerabilities in their products. Who exactly in the tech community is acknowledging that law enforcement should go exploit vulnerabilities?
I don't think Apple is saying we want you to exploit vulnerabilities. In fact, they're trying to develop an unexploitable system. And I'm sorry, I keep using Apple as the example. But to me, they're a good example of, you know, Apple's not trying to make encryption law proof. They're trying to make encryption everyone proof so that your data is your data. And by everyone proof, I mean Apple doesn't even have your data, technically.
That's why you can't just go reset your password and gain access to it.
The problem with that is if you lose access to your data, Apple can't help you with that either because they've designed a very secure and smart system. And again, I'm using them as an example. There's many others that do the same thing. And they're not doing that to thwart law enforcement. They're doing that because privacy is important. We've always had it. It's a right of our country, at least. And they're supporting that. They're not trying to thwart law enforcement.
Exactly. Another quote, we are not talking about encryption protecting the country's nuclear codes, nor are we talking about the customized encryption used by large business enterprises to protect their operations. We're talking about consumer products and services such as messaging, smartphones, email, and voice and data applications. These are all literally things that every person and company uses.
I'm sorry to say that MasterCard's encryption is the same FIPS 140 or FIPS 140-2 government certified encryption.
Yeah.
And by the way, I think huge bank transactions need to have the same level of encryption as some of the crap you're talking about.
What customized encryption is exactly like everyone these days uses form of AES, some standard encryption, because rolling your own encryption is the worst possible thing you could possibly do.
Yes, it's stupid.
Now I'm going to skip my political point because I'm already a little riled up over this, but I mean, there's two possible outcomes from backdooring encryption.
By the way, wait, I need to put my old man Corey before we get to takeaways, which is, I don't get why you're so riled up about this, Mark, because it's like super freaking old news.
It is. I mean, Australia has already done this too. They literally passed a law requiring.
More importantly, we've been talking about this in the U.S. for 5 years. Comey did this in 2015. It's the FBI directors, not only Comey, even more recently, the new FBI director. What's that guy's name? Comey, everyone remembers. But there's a new FBI. Christopher Wray. Mm-hmm. He is also. I mean, the intelligence agencies in the U.S. have been pushing for this for at least 5 years.
And I totally get.
There's nothing new about Barr.
I understand why they're doing it. Like it does. They have like a legitimate need in some cases to get into encrypted devices. It's just the collateral damage from that.
They have a need, but just because they have a need doesn't mean they can defeat everyone's human rights for that need.
Yes.
I mean, I'm not a lawyer. You can definitely get a subpoena to someone's house, but I think the reason people use combination safes is because just because you can get in someone's house doesn't mean the homeowner has to give you the combination to his safe. It's
exactly.
A right of privacy. This is the exact same physical concept put in a digital level.
Yep.
And by the way, the thing I get irritated, I got mad about this like 4 years ago, Mark, because Comey was so arrogant to say, oh, the security community is just not willing to have an adult conversation. We know three key systems are possible. This is their children.
I just rolled
and
the eyes out the back of my head.
We're agreeing that technologically it's possible, but you can't protect your keys. That's the whole point. So they were the one not listening.
How does it go? Nothing you're to not do wrong. With... You're just an a-hole. And so this is my point is that, I mean, if they're trying to backdoor encryption and they force it through with like a law or a requirement similar to what Australia has right now, there are two possible outcomes to this. And the first is either it is toothless, meaning that you can just use open source standards or the bad guys switch to something else in Russia and it literally does nothing to stop whatever they're trying to stop. Or it is so overbearing that it just destroys the U.S. tech sector because all of us rely on encryption. We rely on keeping company secrets safe. Personally, we rely on.
By the way, it would have an economic impact, too. I mean, if suddenly the U.S. government has access to Apple's keys, how does that affect GDPR?
Suddenly, Apple becomes a Canadian company.
Are European companies not going to be buying phones anymore?
Right.
So meaning Apple's, you know, revenue goes way down, which affects the overall U.S. economy. It's just dumb on so many levels.
It really is.
I mean, they use encryption. Should they put backdoors so that the U.S. citizens can check on the intelligence agency to make sure that the intelligence agency is not corrupt?
Oh, no. They and all U.S. politicians get an exemption, I'm sure.
Which makes no sense because they're just as likely to be corrupt as a U.S. citizen is.
The whole thing is just, it's so dumb and it just keeps coming around and around. And I really hope we don't end up like Australia where you are required to add backdoors to all of your security services. It's frustrating.
I guess that would help the Russian economy because I might go to Ghost.
Oh, is Ghost still a thing?
Of course.
Well,
although that might be backdoored, by the way, so maybe I won't go to Ghost. I have a feeling the Russian government and intelligence FSB has an easier job getting Russian companies to adjust their algorithms.
I imagine so. Please don't disappear me. So that was annoying.
Let's send on this lovely note.
Hopefully, I don't know.
Oh, is wait there a something? Second.
Yeah.
There is something else I heard.
How about a happy news story, Corey?
I don't know how happy, maybe weird, but did you know that the French army is actually hiring sci-fi writers to predict the future of cyber threats?
So they're hiring writers to predict where threats are going. I mean, I guess they're creative minds, so you know, it makes that
to be fair, I'll put on my nerd hat. I love sci-fi. There's a lot of like 1920s and even earlier sci-fi that some of the concepts have come true. Things like virtual reality, different types of space travel, you know. sometimes they're out there, but sometimes they're right on. But apparently they hired a small group that they're going to call, or they're going to be hiring a small group that they're calling the Red Team, 4 or 5 science fiction writers and futurists.
The Red Team, they couldn't come up with a cooler name?
I hate that. By the way, it also doesn't make sense because usually the Red Team is your offensive hackers.
Right.
Apparently that's what they're calling them.
France, what the heck?
And they're supposed to propose disruptive scenarios. So maybe it's not figuring out the new cyber attacks, but figuring out the ramifications of all the threats out there. What would happen?
Die
Hard, I mean, essentially, 7. That's what I was going to say. They're pretty much probably going to do the same prediction we did with fire sales and crap like that, or the same prediction that Die Hard made years ago, which I used to think was silly, but somehow, oh, whoa.
So I guess the news from that is if you are a sci-fi writer, there might be an opportunity for you with
new
the French
job.
Army.
If self-publishing isn't really working out, you can get into writing crazy dystopian. I think the French army needs to actually look at our predictions videos. Maybe they should have hired us to imagine this disruptive dystopian future.
Oui. And I have exhausted the extent of my French, so I guess that's a good enough reason or a good enough place to end this episode anyway.
It's a little happier than the government trying to steal all our secrets anyways.
Damn you, William Barr. Hey, everyone. Thanks again for listening. As always, if you enjoyed today's episode, don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. If you have any questions on today's topics or suggestions for future episode topics, you can reach out to us on Twitter. I'm at @XORRO_. Corey is at @SecAdept.
Tweet at me, bro.
The both of us are at #The443Podcast. Thanks again for listening, and we will see you next week.